Welcome to the DigiEat podcast. My name's Nicole Yates, and I am your host for this adventure. We have a great guest for you today. Is comedian and roaster Alex Hooper. Alex is a comic here in LA, and he also won season 2 of Roast Battle on Comedy Central. And he has a special coming out on YouTube just the day that this airs at 7 o'clock. So you should check it out. Just Google Alex Hooper Comedy. Also, I would like you to check out other podcasts. That's right. Check out other podcasts besides this one. And the one that I'm recommending today is 12 Questions. It's hosted by Anna Valenzuela and Dave Yates. And they sit down and they talk with all kinds of people who may or may not be in different kinds of programs and just the way that they approach life. And it's just some very insightful conversation. And it's really, it's a very interesting listen. So check it out. It's called 12 Questions. And also, if you're not wearing a mask, please wear a mask. Please wear a mask. Stay in the house. Stay away from people. Don't go outside. Don't do things. That's why we can't have nice things, okay? So, that being said, hey, let's talk with Alex.
So, hey, I'm here with Alex Hooper. Alex.
Yeah. I'm here with Nicole Yates.
That's right. So, Alex, you're from Baltimore, right?
I am. Yeah, very, very close to where you grew up.
Yeah. Yeah. East Coast kids.
You know it. Yeah, we got that. We got that edge about us, you know?
Yeah. East Coast aggression. Yeah.
Yeah. And that thing where we show up everywhere on time and people don't respect us for it. Yeah, we have that too.
Yeah. You know, when I was talking about moving out here, I was talking to a friend who had already moved out here and he's like, you're going to be just fine. And I was like, well, I like your optimism, but why do you say that? And he's like, because you have an East Coast work ethic. And I'm like, I am a lazy asshole. I don't understand what you mean. And he's like, nobody here shows up for shit on time ever, including for work. And that, like, the idea of being late for work makes me crazy. So I was like, come on. He's like, just for the fact that you show up for, like, on time for things, you have a leg up on, like, everyone else.
I can't be late. It kills me when I know, even when I'm going to be there on time, I'm like in my car, like, oh, damn it. And I try to, like, I get everywhere early so I don't stress about it. But like in California, especially, people just show up everywhere late and they just expect you to wait for them. And I do. So I guess who's really the asshole in this situation? I don't know anymore. It could be me. For showing up early and not getting into the rhythm of California, considering I've lived here for 12 years.
Yeah, I'll hit my 3-year in January, and like it still kind of makes me crazy. But I don't know. California is making me a little more mellow. So.
Definitely. I mean, all that sunshine coming into your system. I mean, it's got to be good for you.
Yeah, remember those 3 months, January, February, March, when you used to not just not see the sun?
Yeah, for sure. And then I moved out here and my depression started to go away a little. And I was like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, I'm just playing outside in beautiful weather all the time. Maybe that's the key to happiness.
Definitely. Well, you're from Baltimore. So I want to ask you a little bit about Baltimore food. Okay. All right. So,
our main dishes, obviously, like we're most famous for blue crabs, right? That's like Maryland blue crabs are one of the most exquisite delicacies in the world. If you ask anyone from Baltimore, if you take someone to a crab feast that is not from Baltimore, get ready to see the most terrified expression you've ever seen on a human being. As we literally, I mean, I remember the first time I took my, fiance to Maryland and we did like a crab feast, and like, you know, you just dump like 3 dozen of these ghoulish bug monsters onto a table, and then we just start hitting them with hammers and cracking them open and sucking out their guts and just eating the legs. And I mean, it is an experience to say the least. You know, and I love crab cakes too, and I love all things crab, but the actual act of cracking open a fresh steamed crab is just so, you work for your food. You can never get like a big bite. It's all just these little tiny morsels that you're sucking out, and it just, it's just so good.
That is good stuff. Well, what if I said burger cookie to you? What does that mean?
Oh, Of course I know burger cookies. Yeah, yeah. They're the best. They're they're these little like shortbread cookies with this, with a shit ton of fudge, like chocolatey stuff on top. And they are, it's literally like half fudge and half cookie. It's like a weird kind of amalgamation of the two. But they are fantastic. Don't leave them in the sun though. They melt very quickly.
Yeah. Brandy Posey ordered a whole bunch of them, and I happened to be at her house and I was dropping something off, and she's like, "Oh, here, have a box of these." And I danced all the way home. And then I live with Stuart Thompson, and I was like, "Hey, Brandy gave me these cookies. Do you want one?" And he was like, "Oh, there seems to be a lot of frosting on these." And I'm like, "You say it like it's a bad thing." Like,
yeah, right.
And I left the room and I came back and half the box was gone. So
Dude, a friend of mine ordered a whole bunch for his wedding last year, and because they wanted to be part of the reception, is that everyone had burger cookies in LA that was like coming in. It was like a Baltimore delicacy. Cool. And they all melted on like the way here. Like they didn't survive the shipping, I guess.
Oh no.
So they can't, they literally just a pile of fudge and like cookie and dough was just in this box. We was like, we can't serve these, but we can like grab a spoon and just like dig in and eat them.
Yeah, totally. So, wow. That actually sounds good too. I mean, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. Is melted ice cream still delicious? Of course it is. You know, right? It's the flavors are all still there. It's just not exactly presentable at a wedding.
Totally. But the way you feel about like a crab boil at like other places besides Baltimore is how I feel whenever I see a cheesesteak somewhere out here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Philly cheesesteak. First of all, you don't have to put the Philly in it. We all know what a cheesesteak is. And they start putting shit on it. Like, but they, for some reason out here, they think that green pepper is like a de facto thing on a cheesesteak, and it is not. And I still, after almost 3 years of living here, freak out when I see that. I'm like, no, it's wrong. It's wrong. It's
just... Personally, I like the green peppers and onions on there. Like, I really dig that style.
Well, the green pepper is fine, but it's not a de facto thing.
Right.
Like, it's an add-on.
Have you found a good cheesesteak out here that, like, could stand up to anything you would get in Philly?
I mean, Booze isn't bad. Booze isn't bad.
Have you ever had the truck, the Philly cheesesteak truck? I feel like they do it right.
I think I've seen the truck, but I haven't had the cheesesteak. It's not so much the steak that is the issue. It's the bread.
Yes, very much so.
Because the bread out here is kind of garbage. So it's, you know, it just falls apart. So when they say that they ship their rolls in, it's usually a good sign. My mom sent me a big box of rolls from Philly. And Ralph's, if you're wondering, sells shaved beef now. And that is cheesesteak meat. So I made cheesesteaks for everybody. And half of them had never had a cheesesteak before. And they were just like, what is this?
And Oh my gosh. It's when it's made right and it's just all warm and gooey. And there's this heat explosion when it hits your mouth. And it's so tender and soft. And it's just like, it's just good. It's comfort food. It makes me happy. Like I used to eat them all the time growing up. I loved them.
Yeah, they're delicious. And people who don't like them are wrong.
Exactly right. Damn straight. Same way I feel about people that don't like crabs. I'm just like, are you, unless you're allergic to shellfish, get out of my face saying you don't like blue crab meat. That is insane.
To not like the meat is crazy. I'm a little impatient to like rip through the crabs, but I will rip up some crab cakes. Like a motherfucker.
I get it. Yeah. I have torn apart my hands like when I was a kid, just scratching them up. And then the worst part is you scratch your hands on the crab legs and then all the seasoning starts to get into your hands. So you're crying because of this stinging pain that is happening throughout your body. But you're also just in heaven because you're eating this delicacy that's just so delicious. And it's just it's a nice paradoxical meal. For sure, if you start scratching yourself up.
Damn you, Old Bay. Damn you.
Oh, yeah. I love it so much. It's so good. I used to put it in my Bloody Marys a lot. And I would do like a crab meat like with Old Bay Bloody Mary. And God damn it, is that delicious.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, I knew we were going to talk about food and I made sure to eat a snack before I did this podcast. And I'm already like, we're like 8 minutes in and I'm like, man, I should probably eat again, huh? Like, this is what happens here. We just talk about all the delicious food we want. And then I look in my cupboard and none of it is there. Yeah. There's just like salads and grapes and blueberries and things. And now I'm just like, I just want a cheesesteak, dude.
Oh, yeah. We, you know, I made a pork shoulder in the crock pot last night.
Nice.
And I got a big thing of it in the fridge waiting for me. So, but that's actually a sandwich that gets slept on in Philly a lot is the pork sandwich, the roast pork sandwich with broccoli rabe and sharp provolone.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm down. Honestly, I'm down for pretty much anything sandwich. Like in Baltimore, like big, like roast beef is a really big thing. Like getting, just getting these really like moist roast beef sandwiches with like a ton of like deli mustard on there and stuff. And it's just so good. But I mean, there's just something about, like, I just like my food to be in some sort of vessel, I guess, when it goes into my mouth, and whether it's like a sub roll or a tortilla wrap or anything like that, I love the idea of eating that stuff. I remember when I was like, when I was in seventh grade, we had these exchange students come over from the Ukraine to like visit our class for a week. And I remember the first thing they did was they all went around and said their name and their favorite food. And one kid was just like, "Hello, my name is Dimitri and I like sandwiches." And I was just like, "That's your favorite food? Fucking sandwiches?" And now I look back at that kid, I'm like, "Dimitri, you were ahead of your time, bro. You were like 11 years old, already knowing that sandwiches are the business. And I'm sorry, I thought anything different of you, you know, anything negative."
Sandwiches are amazing. For my birthday, Stu's mom sent me a pastrami from Katz's Deli.
Get the fuck out of here. How did she send it to you?
You can order them from Katz's. They come shrink wrapped and all you have to do is boil them for a couple hours and they're ready to go.
Hilarious. Oh my God. And it came out like really good. Like
amazing. Like, amazing.
Wow.
Butter. You've eaten there before at Katz's?
Yeah.
It was exactly like you would get. Amazing.
It's the thing. It's so, every time I go to New York and I go to like Katz's or Carnegie or any one of the famous delis, I'm always just like, oh yeah, this costs $23 for some reason. Yeah. And it's just a sandwich. And I'm like, are there like fries with it? They're like, no, you get some pickles. I'm like, I'm paying $23 for a roast beef sandwich. And then I take a bite and I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I pay $23 for a roast beef sandwich.
Well, also the sandwich is the size of your head. So it's actually three sandwiches.
It's so big. It's so, like, honestly, I have a pretty big mouth and I still can only get around like half of it to really get it in there. And no matter what, especially now because of my mustache, if I eat something that is oversized, it ends up all over my face. And then there's no good way to pull myself apart from a sandwich knowing I have a condiment just engrossed in my hairy face, you know?
Do you smell it the whole rest of the day, no matter how much you wash your face?
I mean, yeah, I would never wash my face if it was covered in mustard because I would just prefer to smell that all day. It's the same thing that happens when I, like, you know, when I go down on my fiance. It's like, I'm not washing my face right now. This stays with me.
Fair. That's fair. That's fair. I'll accept that. Yeah. yeah, there's some decent deli out here, I've noticed. You know, Canner's is pretty good. Brent out in Northridge has a really good pastrami.
I haven't done that one. I live right near Green Blatt's. That's a pretty big, pretty famous one right next to the Laugh Factory. Uh-huh. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing is, like, you know, we got a lot of Jews out here. So it's not like New York has the deli game like on lock or anything like that. Like, that's one weird thing about LA is, like, we have all the same immigrants that New York does. And for some reason, all the chefs chose to go to New York and not come to LA. Like, when people say there's not good Chinese food in LA, I didn't believe that stereotype when I moved out here. Like, people told me that lived there, they're like, Alex, it's true. There's really not. It really is few and far between. There's so many fast Chinese places, but to actually get like really good, legit, like Yunnan or Sichuan or something like that, it is difficult to find. So,
That is weird. And like, I'm Polish and there's like, I don't know where my people either did not make it out here or there's like two Polish restaurants all in all of LA. And I don't know where the Eastern Europeans, I guess, never made it over the Mississippi. I don't know what happened there.
But, yeah, I don't know. But where are we going to get our pierogies, you know?
I don't know. I got to make them for Christmas and I'm not looking forward to it. So.
Oh, you make your own?
Yeah, I used to have a pierogi business when I lived in Philly.
Damn. Did you do all kinds of different like specialty ones and stuff?
I did regular potato and the sauerkraut and the cheese, right? And then I did potato, yep, cheese chive, potato cheese chive bacon. I did a cheesesteak one. I did a buffalo chicken one. Did a pulled pork, damn, and provolone with roasted red pepper. Occasionally I did a cheeseburger one and I did a couple of dessert ones too. Yeah. I blew out my shoulder so that I had to kind of hang up my rolling pin.
From the pierogi making?
Yeah. I did it for like 3 years. I made like 10,000 dozen and I rolled all the dough myself. I worked like 18 hours a day. It was a nightmare.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I went to school in Pittsburgh and I never had a pierogi as far as I remember when I was in Baltimore. And then I get to Pittsburgh and they're just everywhere. And I just like, I fell in love with them. I started like buying them in the giant bags from like Costco and stuff like that. Like they're just, I love them. Haven't had them in a long time.
They're so good. They're really good. But my problem is now is that like I made them for so long that like I have trouble eating other people's pierogies.
I'm sure.
Because I'm just like, oh, it needs more butter or where's the salt? Or, you know, it's.
I'd be like, yeah, and the chef's like, you think you can do better, miss? And you're like, get me back in that kitchen, sir. I will show you exactly what you're doing wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just, it's, I feel like an old lady saying it like, it's not as good as mine, you know, but. It is.
No, you're allowed to say that. If you've done something for a very long time and you've put in your 10,000 dozen pierogies, you know, which we all know that's the magic number. And when you reach perfection, right. I think you're allowed to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about you and stand up. Did you start stand up in Baltimore? Or did you start stand up out in L.A.?
Los Angeles, baby. I was out here like 4.5 months. And then I started, I just kind of fell into it. A friend of mine was like, you should really do stand up. I came out here to act and I was kind of bored because you can't just act in something all the time, but you can get on stage whenever you want as a stand up. So he pushed me into it and first set done. And I immediately knew, I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is my calling. This is the answer. It was everything I'd been looking for. And it's been game on since then, since March 9th, 2009.
Wow. Oh, so yeah. So you're, how many years is that? It's like 12 years?
Almost 12. Yeah. It'll be 12 in March.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm just a little bit behind you. I hit 10 years in April. So.
Oh, it's such a good feeling, right? You just hit 10 years in April?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 10 years was such a huge achievement because I'm sure like you, like, just like myself, everyone told you like 10 years, everyone, 10 years, you're going to be fine. You're going to have it figured out this. And I always kind of thought like, oh, that just means I'll be super successful at 10 years. And that's not what it means. But what it does mean is that you've been doing it long enough that you understand what you want to do and the direction that you want to go. And that you have a good voice for writing jokes and you've made enough contacts and like things like that, where people will at that point know you well enough that you are, it's more so like you've legitimized yourself and said, I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. Like, you know, if you drop out before 10 years, like even people at like 6 or 7, like I'm going to do this forever. I'm like, we'll see, you know, wait till 10, you know, because you just don't know, like anything could happen. I mean, look how many people have quit this year because of the pandemic. And I don't blame them at all. But for me, quitting is simply just not an option. This is the only thing I've ever found that I wanted to do and am willing to put the work in to get where I need to be.
Yeah. I know a lot of people who are like, I'm not doing Zoom shows. That's not comedy. And I'm like, well, that's all there is right now. And I'll take it, you know?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I had somebody say to me, they're like, dude, I went to one Zoom show and I was like, I'm not doing that. And I looked at them, I was like, what if you went to one open mic? and just said, that's it. This isn't for me. This sucks. Yeah, most of them suck. But sometimes you get one that's really good. Yeah. And like sometimes, you know, if nothing else, it's all just practice and resistance training for when we get back in front of regular crowds again.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing more shows like outdoors and a lot. I've been performing at the Comedy Store window a lot. Like we're literally performing through the window out to the patio. And it is insanely difficult. But again, it's just like, I'm like, if this is playing the game on hard mode, once I get back into a club where people have bought tickets and paid to see stand-up comedy or even myself, it's just going to be so much easier to relate to them. And I'm going to have to like calm down a little bit because like part of me doing all these outside and window shows is I'm at like 1,000, like all the time to try to make sure that I don't like lose them in any way. Because what happens, you can see people at outside shows, they'll just get distracted. They'll start talking to the person next to them because they don't feel like they paid for a show or anything like that. They're just sitting outside. And so you have to just be the biggest thing happening around. And I know when I get back into a club, I'm going to have to be like, hey, Alex, take that energy, but hone it in there, man. Like bring it back to a level that's desirable to listen to.
I mean, maybe not though. You know, I mean,
maybe
people are going to need that. I think by the time, and God knows when we'll be able to get back inside again for shows, you know, maybe they're going to need that energy, you know, take that energy home with them.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, the thing is, I've always been a high energy comic. And over at the beginning, I would just scream all the time. Like my default was just go loud and force them into your world. But then I realized as I got further along and I got better and more nuanced, I realized like, I don't need to scream to keep your attention. In fact, playing with all the levels, going super, super quiet and then loud and then back to quiet. That's how you really get people into it. Like sometimes people think screaming is the answer if people are talking. It's not. No. It's the exact opposite.
Yes.
It's like in school when the teacher would want you to be quiet. So she would just raise her hand and then slowly everyone would have to raise their hand until nobody was talking anymore. That sometimes that's what a comedy club is. If somebody's heckling, you just stop and then they realize that they're the ones making noise. And then they feel the shame enough to be like, oh, we probably shouldn't be talking right now.
One of the best pieces of advice I ever got is do you know Chip Chantry?
No, I don't think so.
He's a comic out of Philly. He does stuff with Todd Glass. He's super, super funny. And
it's a great name.
I know, right? Very, very alliterative. But he gave me this great piece of advice when I first started, which was don't be afraid of silence.
Yeah. Yeah. And we are. I mean, it is silence as a comedian can be terrifying until you learn how to live in it and to realize that it's not a bad thing for silence to be there because it means they're paying attention.
Yeah.
And if you can hold those silences and really build tension and create moments within, then you're going to be stellar because you can pace yourself. You can take your time. You can choose to expend energy here or maybe not like without doing it the whole time. It's really, I still have to tell myself that. Like embrace pauses and silences. And as long as they're not talking, you're doing something right.
Yeah. They're still on that train with you. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And I've gotten to the point now where sometimes like I'll write a bit that intentionally has like a 1 to 2 minute really long buildup where you're not supposed to be laughing throughout that. And I'm just going, making higher. And then I just come crashing down with one giant punchline that like brings it all together. And those moments feel just as good as a continuous rolling laughter because you know you had them on the hook the entire time.
Yeah. That when you hit that big punchline like that, there's nothing better than that.
And what about when it doesn't work? When you've built up all that time and then it just lands flat and you're like, okay, well, that was it. And now I don't know how to get off stage because you were all supposed to explode at that moment and no one did anything. So great.
So humbling. It's so humbling when you just eat it. And you're just like, all right, Ben, you guys have been great. I'm done. You shake the guy's hand as you walk off stage and you cry in your car. You know,
that's it. Yeah. Well, that's it from me, I guess.
It's insane. So what was your push to start doing roast battle?
God, you know, I didn't even want to, I know that sounds crazy considering like what it's given me, but in the beginning I went and watched it a few times. I used to watch it. And when as soon as it started, I was up there and I was like, this is crazy. This is so fun. The energy in here is so palpable. And you can just, I've never been a part of anything like this before. And then people were like, do you want to do it? And I was like, fuck no, I don't want to do that. Like that is, I don't need to get stand up there and made fun of. I don't think that's my style. I don't think that's my writing or anything. And then my friend Jason Van Glass really wanted to do it and he needed someone. So he asked me, he's like, Alex, will you please do this with me? Like, I don't feel comfortable asking a lot of other people. You and I know each other. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And our battle was legendary. Like it was only 4 or 5 months into the show. There would only be two battles. There was an undercard and a main event. And Jason and I were the undercard. We're supposed to do two rounds. We tie, we go into a third round. The room is exploding. And when it got to the main event, like Jason and I walked off stage and we're like, that was the best it could have gone, right? That was the best. You can't go any better. We should never do this again. And like just end on a high note, like do the whole, like, the George Costanza, like everyone one laugh. All right, I'm out. See you guys later.
Great.
And then we were standing in the back and during the main event, it wasn't good. And the whole audience started chanting undercard, undercard, undercard during the main event. So Jason and I were back there like, holy shit, dude. Like we did so well. They're now chanting for us while other people are telling their shitty jokes. And I was like, cool, I'm never doing this again. As soon as I was about to leave, Brian Moses, the host of the show, the referee, walked up and was like, hey, yo, this other guy wants to battle you. You got 3 weeks. And I was like, what? He's like, it's a main event, so prepare 3 rounds. And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. He's like, too bad, you're in. and that's when it started. It was just like, then it became this kind of just nonstop force where I wasn't losing. And I took the number one spot and I held that title for over a year. And then it just started, I just fell in love with the joke writing process and just the Thunderdome arena. And I'd never been a part of anything like that before. You can tell a joke in stand up and people will laugh and, you know, maybe like, you know, maybe hit the table a little bit, maybe look around the room. But in roast battle, people will start slamming their hands against the wall. They're banging their feet on the floor. They're screaming shit at you. And I fell in love. And as I got better at it, I got more and more weird with it. And then I got so good at it that I became bored with myself and bored with winning. And the way I equate it is like, if you're really good at Mario Kart, it's fun, but it's also not that fun to always be in the lead. You don't get any good items. You're never chasing anybody. You're just defending your title the whole time. And that's how I felt in roast battle. It's like everyone else has spike shells and I'm getting banana peels hoping for the best.
Right.
And I want to get back to a place where I get the fun items, you know? So that's when I started dressing up in all these outlandish costumes and really kind of finding myself in that world and becoming something that no one had ever seen before on the show. Like no one had really attempted to do these grandiose styled intros and things like that. So it just suddenly was like, now I'm having fun again. Like for a little while during roast battle, it's like, I'm taking this too seriously. Why? It's supposed to be fun. And then I started having fun again. I also started losing a lot more because I was taking such giant risks, but I didn't care because I was having more fun and the show was more fun with me like that than it was when I was just this angry, bitter, like, shut up, that wasn't funny. Listen to what I wrote, you know?
Right, right. Interesting, okay.
Yeah. Wow. I really just, that show allowed me to really discover the type of comic I would like to be. And it's just so antithetical to who I am as a person. Like, I'm not a mean person. I don't want to make people feel less than what they are or should be. But at the same time, they understand it's a perfect release for all the dark energy that swirls around inside of me that I need to get out in a healthy way so I don't go blow up a school bus.
I mean, we all thank you for that.
I mean, some of the parents would like me to blow up that school bus. Yeah. We got to get rid of little Jennifer. I really like, I mean, seriously, look, when I'm in, if I'm in a dark place, I'll start writing those types of jokes and I will feel better. And this levity just comes into me and I'm like, I feel okay now. Now I'm okay.
Well, that leads me into something else I wanted to talk to you about. So, you know, you were on America's Got Talent, you know, and roasting the judges, which was fucking great. What I've noticed is the more people, because anytime you show up on TV, people just want to say shitty things about you. Like, no matter who you are, you could be the Pope. It doesn't matter. People are like, oh, fuck you. But like, your positivity is like off the charts. Like, how do you get to that? How do you get from like, you know, the angry kid from Baltimore to this dude who is just so, and I've said this to you in an email once that like, it's weird. It's like, whenever like I'm in my head too much, I'll see one of your posts and it somehow it like speaks to how I'm feeling.
And oh, interesting. That's good.
And I don't know how you do that. It freaks me out a little bit, but like, how do you get there? How does that work?
Dude, I mean, it's years of self-care. It is not, none of this is an accident. Like, I was such a piece of shit and a horrible person when I was younger. My whole thing was, I am miserable and I am depressed and I feel like the world is against me. So I'm going to bring everyone I can into my little shit universe. I'm going to hook you in like Scorpion in Mortal Kombat, just get over here and just like bring you in and not let you leave. If like, I would see a happy person and I'd be like, don't you know there's kids dying in Africa, like whatever, like get, I was terrible. And when I realized I wanted to stop living like that and start going to the other side, it was like a very conscious effort to start being like, how do I make people feel good around me? How do I make myself feel good? And I mean, there's a few answers. Finding love was a huge one, obviously. Finding someone that believed in me and allowed me to grow as I am without any sort of agenda or trying to change me in any way. Finding, like, getting my pugs, you know, finding the love of these animals. Psychedelics, a big one. Just really not being afraid to go in deep to myself and like take care of my shit and forgive myself for who I used to be. Music festivals are a big part of it. Just finding these large groups of people that just value silliness and love and radical free expression over everything else. And then just honestly, like, I realize what people are doing when they write shitty comments now, because I would have, if I had really been on the internet, like a lot, like when I was at my angriest, I would have been that person. I would have been the troll that just looked for aggression and to start fights. And I realized that that's not what they want to be doing. Something is miswired inside their head. They're in a bad mood. They're having a shit day, whatever it may be. So I think the best way to respond to them is just with ultimate love and optimism. And that's the last thing most of them expect. Most of them don't even want it, because all they want me to do is say, fuck you. And that's how they win. If I engage, but I do it the way they want, which is to be upset or discontent, then they win. If they go after me and I come back by saying like, hey, why are you reaching out to a stranger on the internet to tell them how you feel when you could give the same energy to your family and friends about how much you love and adore them? Don't you think they'd appreciate it? Don't you think you'd be happier? And then most people don't respond, but every once in a while somebody goes, yeah, you're right, dude. I'm sorry. I had a really shit thing happen to me at work and I don't know why I came home to take it out on people on the internet. And you're right, I shouldn't be doing this. And it's just one of those things where it's, I made this choice where I still want to be dark and I still want to be edgy and offensive, and but I want to do it in a way where people understand that it's coming from a good place. That's what is very difficult to come across as, like, as someone who's made him a name for himself as a roaster. People think I'm angry at the world. They think I'm rude. They think I'm mean. And I'm not. It's like, this is my way of having fun and pretending to be something that I'm not. And that's honestly where all the silly outfits come in too, is like, you're going to get mad at me when I'm wearing a unitard and a tail that glows in the dark. How do you not understand this is a joke? You know, and some people still don't, but they wouldn't be my fans anyway. So who gives a fuck?
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, do you feel like, as your attitude got better, better things were drawn to you? Like that, I feel like that's all sort of a big bundle, you know?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, that's what, like, I'm like, you know, I read all these personal development books and so many of them about, like, creative visualization and, like, you know, writing things down that you want and thinking about them and really just, like, putting out into the world what you want. And one of the big things is that when you become someone that people want to be around, then you'll get more work intrinsically, just because you're a fun person. Like, the thing about, like, being in this industry is you need to make your friends and just be easy to work with. Like, we were talking about showing up on time is such a huge one. And because, especially if you're going to be on, like, a TV set, you're spending 14 hours a day together, 5 days a week. Like, you better fucking like these people. So I just figure, I if I'm truly myself and I stay true to who I want to be and I keep just going after my purpose, which is to spread love, create joy, have fun, you know, just really, I think about every interaction in the same way. When I encounter a person, I want them to leave feeling better than they did when they first came into contact with me. Because it used to be the opposite. I used to be like, oh, you're happy? Get down here. Welcome to hell, motherfucker. And now I'm just like, no, I want you to, if you walk, come up to me walking, I want you to leave skipping. Like, so if I think about that and I'm conscious about it, then typically it works. And I will say, when I started really believing in myself and trusting myself and being more fearless, that is when all the good started happening, for sure. A perfect example of this is 2016. I don't think you and I knew each other yet. Maybe we had just met once or twice. But I did this huge project on Facebook where every single day of the year I wrote about someone else in my life that I love, am inspired by, motivates me. It was called my Awesome Person Project. Yeah. So I think we knew each other then a little bit.
Yeah, I remember reading those posts on Facebook. They were awesome every day.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And so 366 days where every day I had to spend a few minutes thinking about why I love another person and writing about it. That year changed my life. Like, that whole doing that every single day, I just realized, like, the person I want to be and the energy that I want to put out. But the biggest thing was in December of that year of 2016, which, as we all know, was a brutal year for most people until this one came up. Like, 2016 seemed like the end of the world until we get to where we are now and we realize, wow, I would do anything to have 2016 back. But in December, I got the call from Comedy Central that I was going to be on season 2 of Roast Battle. And all I could think is, I've spent the whole year being as nice and positive as I possibly can. And my reward is I get to go on national television on a station that I've wanted to be on since I was little and say the worst fucking things imaginable about my friends. What a gift. I've been so nice that now I get to take a shit in all of their mouths. This is beautiful karma. So after that, it was like, game on, play this, do whatever you want. As long as you can back it up, I fully believe that, like, any idea is possible and you just have to execute.
Wow.
That was a lot. That was a mouthful.
That was a mouthful, but like, I mean, I'm here for it, man. I'm here for it. I mean, we live in a very negative world, and, you know, and being mean, like on purpose, like not just like in a roast battle, but being mean is kind of like people really like it. And I did a show that was, it was called Jokes, Roast and Toast, where like you had to do one of like each of those things. And, I did it with Anna Valenzuela, and she was on the show, and I was like, yeah, I've never done a roast before. And she's like, yeah, I don't think this is for you. And I was like, oh no, let's just try it. Try it. Cause Barker was always like, oh yeah, when you come to town, you should try it. And I'm like, all right. So I did it. And my jokes were fine. I thought my jokes were fine. Got a lot of laughs, but the guy that I was going up against, like, I just took it a little too personally. You know, mm-hmm. I was like
you took his jokes too personally, or you went after him too personally.
I think I took them a little too personally, because they weren't really jokes, as they were just like observations. And I think that's what was bothering me. You know, like when you say, oh, she's a nerd, what a great way to have a personality, or, you know, or like something like that. And I'm like, that's not even a joke. Like,
that's not a joke.
That's just an observation. And like, it drove me up a wall. Anna had to talk me down.
Well, that would irk me as well, because the thing is, like, I at first roast battle hurt, and I would tell people, I'm like, make no mistake, that audience is laughing at you, not with you. When you tell your jokes and they land, they're laughing with you. Right. But when it's against you, and it's not the moment when I told myself, I know everything about myself. There's nothing they could say that I've never been way more harsh on than myself. It's not the moment they say it. It's the moment 100 people in the room see it. That's when it hurts. And it's like, oh, like, and everyone's, because you can, like, I remember when Joe Dosh said, who now Fifi Dosh said, I look like the moon in a silent movie. And the audience, and Jason Reitman was there, you know, Academy Award-winning director is here, and he's laughing his ass off. And I'm just like, fuck me, because everyone saw that visual at the same time, and everyone got it. And it was like, oof, this hurts. But in the end, the only thing I'm offended by now is when the joke's not funny. Yeah. You can tell me, I invite people, roast me. I don't care. I can handle it. One thing I got after America's Got Talent is all these people were like, oh, what a jerk. He can dish it out, but I bet he can't take it. And motherfuckers, I can take it. I can take it harder than almost anybody, because I spent so many years berating myself emotionally that nothing could bring me down lower. And what Roast Battle did for me, which is so bizarre, is it made me completely okay with how I look. Like, I've had so many roast jokes, hundreds of roast jokes written about me, maybe even thousands, where everyone compares me to something else. So when it starts going down the list, and it's like, how can I be mad at this anymore? I just feel like I look like a million different things to a million different people. This is who I am, and I'm totally okay with it. And that's when I stopped walking and I started like running. And that's when like my true originality and style really started to come to fruition.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. I guess I had to tear you down so you could rebuild.
Yeah, but I understand when you say I don't want to do roast and stuff. I get it. When people tell me I don't want to do roast battle, I'm never like, you should. You'll have so much fun. I'm like, if you don't think you want to do it, then yeah, stay away from it. It's not something that you need to invite into your life. Because one thing that does come with it, and this is just so, I never expected this, is like people send me, they'll just roast me out of nowhere. Like, I'll get recognized. I've been recognized on the street, and somebody will just walk up and be like, nice gap in your teeth, you stupid dick face. And I'm just like, excuse, who are you? And they're like, big fan, brody. And I'm just like, that's how you say it? Like, what is wrong with you people? I get these messages. I have people in my DMs or on my comments, like every photo I do, somebody will like comment to whatever, oh, whatever. I guess Richard Simmons is up smoking meth again. And I'm like, dude, I just made a post about how happy I am today. And like, it's fine. I've invited this into my life, but like also time and a place, dude.
It's sort of like when you run into somebody that is not a comic and they're like, I want to try comedy. You just make it up as you go along. There's no real work, right? Like it's those kinds of people, you know, and it's like, they don't realize that you are, you know, you put, it's so much work. So much work. Like
it's only not, if you want to be good at it, it's so much work, 100%. Yeah. And that's what like, you know, I think I just watched the Comedy Store documentary that was on Showtime. Uh-huh. And one of the things Jay Leno said is like, he's like, I wasn't funnier than everybody else. I just worked harder. I wrote every single day and I made sure that I had new material every single day to bring to the stage. So it's not, again, I'm not the funniest person ever. I was just willing to work harder and not just like party the whole time and fuck off and, you know, just sit in my room and try to get laid all day or whatever it may be. And that's what I think, you know, you see those people when you're in the open mic scene, you see the people that are outside talking. Then it's their turn. They run inside. Then they go back out. Right. Mm-hmm. And they, when they're up there, they're kind of like, ah, what else am I thinking about? What else? That person didn't put in the work. And maybe it's not that day, or maybe they never will. And then there's other people that are sitting there with their notebooks. They're actively listening. They're being a good audience member to their peers so that when they get up there, that everyone will pay attention and give them the reverence that they deserve. And that's how I've always treated comedy, is like, I party my face off. Like, I don't need to tell you that. Like, everyone knows me as this like party person, but I don't let it get in the way of my work. Like, I still put in the time every single day to make sure that I'm a better comic than I was yesterday.
Yeah. Mike Lawrence wrote this piece for the Daily Beast once that I read by accident. And it was like, just like advice for comics. And then he was talking about comics in New York, but I think it's kind of applicable everywhere. And he's like, you know, you go to an open mic. He's like, it's not a social scene. I mean, it is a social scene, but like, you know, you're there for a purpose. Like, if you want to do something with this, like, you're there for a reason, and don't get lazy and just do shows where all your friends are, because your friends aren't everybody, you know. Push yourself, do those fire hall shows, get book shows in Jersey, book shows out of town, out of your neighborhood, away from your friends, with people you don't know. Like, push yourself. And I think about that every once in a while, like when I start to get a little bit, like feeling a little bit lazy, you know, I catch myself in that. And it's true. It's like, you got to put the work in. And it's not like an open mic is not, if you're really serious about it, like, yeah, it's fun to see your friends and stuff, but like there is a line, and it's work. I'm working.
Yeah. And also the familiar becomes easy after a while. It's your safe space. Right. And so you go there and you feel comfortable, but comfort's not good in comedy. Like, you shouldn't be comfortable. Like, you should get to a point when you're comfortable in on stage, but it should start with a little bit of fear and hesitation, because, oh, you're looking around a room. I've never been here. I don't know these people. I could fucking bomb right now. And I'm going to do my best not to do that. But yeah, you got to live in this kind of uncomfortable place. And I remember when Mike Lawrence actually put that piece out, because I remember reading the same thing. And I would recommend, just to toot my own horn for a moment, I wrote a piece on my 10-year anniversary of stand-up called 10 Years Down, A Lifetime to Go. And if you've never read it, I'll send you a copy of it. But it was basically it was 17 tips that I've picked up along the way that I mostly wrote for myself to, I read it once every few months again to remind myself of like why I do this and what I should be doing. But it got a lot of love from young comics, especially. Like, people were coming up to me in the halls of the Comedy Store like, hey, you're Alex Hooper, right? And I'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, I read your piece and it just like meant so much to me and I learned so much. And they would just, so I started like meeting people because of it. And I just think if you write down in your words like that, like what you really feel strongly and passionately about, people will respond to it. The same way that you're going to remember that Mike Lawrence advice forever, I would hope that a few people that read that piece from me picked up a few things that they were like, yeah, that's the thing. And I'm going to love it in a few years when somebody walks up and says, the reason I did this is because I read that thing and it always stuck with me. Because we put all this shit out into the world, Nicole, and we never know where it's going to go or who it's going to affect or what it's going to be, but we just do it. Like, you know, the reason you and I are doing this podcast is we don't know how many listens it's going to get. We don't know how it's going to affect anybody, but we know if we show up and we do this and we have these meaningful conversations and we talk to each other and we're friends and we fill our cups by having this great conversation, if it gets out in the world and we just don't know where it's going to live from that point on. But for all we know, we could say something in here that finds life in a person's brain, and that's the thing that fuels them to move forward. And, you know, it's all good.
Totally. So you have a new project coming out.
Yes. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Let's tell the kids at home.
So on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. On YouTube, my YouTube channel is Alex Super Comedy. Last year I went to London and I did 12 shows over 5 days. Two friends came with me, non-comedians, one of whom is a filmmaker, and filmed nonstop the entire time, just walking around with a camera, filming every show. And the idea was we were going to put together like a 7 to 10 minute little tour documentary as a proof of concept so I could sell a special that I was going to film in September of this year. Obviously, I did not film a special in September of this year. So instead, what my friend did is he turned this, all the footage, into a 30-minute, and it's a blended comedy special, travelogue, tour documentary. And it's basically me running around London with a couple of friends, eating all the pastries, seeing all the sights, doing as many shows as possible. And you're just following behind the scenes along the way. But what makes this special so unique and why I'm so proud of it is that you're never watching me do comedy for more than about 15 or 20 seconds before it's underlaid with all the B-roll footage of us running around London. So it's basically like, if you think of like a band tour documentary, you see them on stage, they start to play the song, but next thing you know, you're still listening to the song and it's showing them, oh, backstage at catering and then getting on the tour bus and then signing autographs, right? But you're still listening to that same song. So that's how we approach this special, is you're hearing jokes constantly, but you're not just watching me on stage telling them, because, you know, comedy specials are getting a little boring. They are getting a little mundane. They're not, like, as comedians, there's nothing harder in the world than to capture the energy of a room in a special. It just can't happen. And you and I have been part of such electric comedy experiences. We've been in the room when someone is legitimately killing. And then you watch that same hour on TV, on Netflix, and you're like, it doesn't seem right. It doesn't feel the same.
Yeah.
And it's because it's impossible to capture that energy. So this, I feel like it moves really well, and it's just it's very entertaining and fun. There's just a lot of like interesting little like nuances and quips to it. But the reason here's how I knew it was good is when he sent it to me, the final version that we're going to release, and I watched it, I was thoroughly entertained watching myself. And that's when I knew, I was like, we have something here.
Yeah, because when you're not picking apart yourself, you know you're on to something.
100%. Because as comics, listening to our sets, watching our sets, we hear, you know, I can see every single thing and I still hear it. Like there's a couple of times when like I make a point where I'll say a stand-up line, then I'll go, okay, to the audience, and I just hear it. I'm like, oh God, can we just lose that shit? You know? But watching this, and the few people that we've showed it to have all been like, this made me feel good. Like, especially in these times when we can't be running around meeting strangers, eating at all these different restaurants, doing all these shows, watching this, like, it was just like, it was like, it's a nostalgic kind of feeling of like, oh yeah, remember travel? remember being in crowded places, like all this stuff. So I'm just so excited at this point for people to see it. And I do think it's going to make people think a little differently about how possibly to arrange a special in the future. I really think that, I love when people do something really different. Like Maria Bamford is great at it. She never does the same kind of special twice. You know, she's willing to take those risks that if you fail, you're going to fail hard. But if you succeed, you're going to fucking thrive. And I think being able to take those risks is paramount to finding success in your career as a comedian. You got to separate yourself from the pack.
Yeah, no, nobody has ever been super successful by playing it safe. It just doesn't.
No,
it just doesn't happen.
Of course not. You have to scare yourself. You might have to scare the audience a little bit sometimes. I mean, and that's one thing that, like, after America's Got Talent, the first time when I was booed by 3,000 people for 7 straight minutes, you get off that stage and you start to, you know, you take the gun out of your mouth when you get home and you're like, wait a minute, maybe this isn't worth it. But you start to realize that, like, I survived that. How much worse could it ever get than that? And I not only survived, but it made my career in some ways, just showing that I was fearless and I was confident and I was just willing to take that chance. So to release a special like this that I think is such a good extension of who I am and what I'm about, just silliness and love and just hardcore jokes, I can't wait for this thing to come out. And I'm so happy that it's coming out this year when we've all been reminded of like what's important and what we've lost at the same time.
Absolutely. All right, final question. What was your favorite thing to eat in England?
Oh, gosh. You know, okay. So there is, there's so much good Indian food there. They have a very, very big Indian population in England. And there is this one, oh my God, what is the restaurant called? Dishwa. I'm losing the goddamn name of it. There's like two of them there. There's always a wait. But it is absolutely delicious. It starts with a D. I can't remember. Dishoom. It's called Dishoom. 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 Such an incredible meal. Like, it's one of those places where you just order like 10 things and they just set it on this giant table in front of you. And there was only 3 of us. And I mean, it was the middle of the day. We were eating lunch and we just feasted so hard. And it was just the best Indian food I've ever had. Because, you know, England does have good food, not like, but British food itself is obviously just kind of whatever, but their other delicacies were fantastic. And obviously the pastries over there. I mean, we would, because I watched the Great British Baking Show, like I would stop in every single bakery that I would pass and I'd be looking for like different little things that I've seen on the show. But yeah, London as a whole, I mean, there's delicacies all over the place. It's fantastic.
Oh, so jealous. So jealous. I want to go so bad.
But you'll get there one day. I mean, they're in a serious lockdown right now. They are back to full quarantine until early December. So, man, I mean, I just hope we get to all travel again soon and do normal shows. And I think it's still going to be a little while, but hopefully this special will entertain people in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll give them that taste of what they're missing. Definitely.
Yeah. Hope so. Yeah. Awesome. So November 19th, 7 p.m. YouTube, please go comment on it. Go share it, watch it. But if you like and leave a comment, it drives it further into the algorithm. So because I'm self-releasing this and I know it's going to get buried by, because YouTube will be like, oh, this guy cares about this. Shove it to the bottom and don't let it come out and see the light of day. So right. My main thing is I'm going to be sending out a million messages in the next week to be like, please, when this airs, please go comment. Please just go comment on it. Like whatever. Just, you can even watch it. But what I really need is for you to comment on it.
Okay. I will tell my friends. And
thank you.
And all 4 of them will leave comments.
Yes, that's all I need, baby. I'm just here to get those 4, Nicole. That's the only reason I'm here.
So you have any Zoom shows coming up or anything to plug?
I'm sure I do, but I can't. I run one with Sophia Alexandra called Coping Mechanism. And if you go to copingmechanismcomedy.com, you can register for our email address and we'll alert you whenever we do shows. We typically do them about every 2 weeks. So copingmechanismcomedy.com. And if you want to follow me, hoopercomedy.com.
There you go. All right. Well, hey, man, thanks for sitting down and chatting. I really appreciate it.
Dude, it was such a pleasure, Nicole. It's great to see him.
Absolutely.
All right, that was Alex Hooper. He's just the best. I mean, I think we could all use with some positivity right now. And Alex has it in buckets and buckets. So check out his special on YouTube. Just type in Alex Hooper Comedy right in the YouTube thing there. Pull it right up. And you can check him out, alexhoopercomedy.com. Enjoy. You can also catch me all over the internet at yatesycomedy.com. And you can also check out stand-up show that I do on Zoom with my friend Jimmy Calloway, who has another podcast that you would love called As the Worm Turns. It's basically an awesome radio show that he curates, and like, it's awesome. So anyway, me and Jimmy do a show twice a month. Our next show is the 21st, this Saturday, and we have a great lineup. You can check all of that out at No Thanks Comedy on Instagram, Facebook, and you can get it on our mailing list if you want to find out when there's other shows. Because let's face it, we're all going into lockdown. So you might as well sit at home and laugh. Anyway, you can check me out at yatesycomedy.com or yatesy75 all over Twitter and Instagram. And of course, as always, you can check out DigiEat at Digia, D-I-D-J-A underscore eat on Instagram. We post all kinds of food pictures. And when I say we, I mean me. Post all kinds of pictures and fun stuff all over the place. So check it out. And if you like this podcast, tell a friend. And if you really like this podcast, if you could rate and review it on iTunes, it would be much appreciated. Think of it as an early Christmas present. We really need more listeners. Hey, why not, right? So anyway, wear a mask, stay in the house, listen to some podcasts, watch some comedy, have a good time, stay safe out there, and hey, did you eat?